Welcome to the Gym Podcast. Uncut, unfiltered, unreal.
Welcome everyone to the Gym Podcast. Welcome folks, I'm your host Joe Fisher. Joining me this week as always is the one and only Randy Darsh.
Hello everybody, welcome to the Gym Podcast. I'm ready for an exciting week, a real week one instead of week zero.
Yeah, we're going fast this week, dude. We're going, this is going to be a fast podcast. This is the Gym Lungecast, if you will. So we have a lot to talk about. We have a lot to talk about. Before we hop in, Randy, first of all, how's it going? How's it going, Randy?
It's going well. We're having to make do with what we have on our lunch break, so it is what it is.
I'm excited
for college football. Yeah, and
did you watch some last week, I'm guessing? I mean, we can real quick talk about the one.
Okay, so what I really wanted to talk about was the Hawaii-Stanford game, and I wanted to give a shout-out to Hawaii's quarterback. Micah Aladeo, I think that's how you pronounce his name.
Okay.
5'10", 180 pounds, not exactly the prototypical quarterback build, but we are seeing more Zoomer quarterbacks with this build.
Yeah.
But true. I have to give him a shout out because he was playing on one leg and you could see him obviously limping the entire game. Mm-hmm. But he kept throwing dimes, making plays. He had 210 yards, 2 touchdowns, 0 interceptions. And it was just really cool to see a kid just be a warrior and just go out there completely hobbled and still make plays unafraid while he kept getting blitzed by Stanford.
Right. Yeah. No, I mean, honestly, like, they fell behind like 17-0 and I thought it was over. But found a way, dude. Found a way. So shouts out to Hawaii. A well-earned victory over ACC powerhouse Stanford.
Yep. There's really not actually a lot to talk about other than that. Do you just want to go ahead and get straight into these games?
Let's go for it. There's a lot of games to preview. I'd say a lot of big games. Starting off, let's bring it to Madison, folks. Tonight, in a handful of hours, by the time you're listening to this, I will be at the opening game for Wisconsin. We're facing Miami of Ohio. I just wanted to say, folks, knock on wood, this might be one of maybe two wins all season that we have. At least one or two opportunities to win a game. So please pray for me if you watch it tonight. That's all I will say.
Here's what I noticed about Wisconsin. I feel like I should give a more objective opinion.
Okay.
Is that Luke Fickell really seems to struggle to get the team motivated for these games. 100%. So I feel like it's going to be one of those games where it feels really close at half. You're going to send me doomer messages because you're only winning like 10-7 or something like that.
Yep.
And like you'll end up winning by maybe 2 touchdowns, but it's like, why are we not beating this team we are superior to by more? That's very concerning.
Yeah, 100%.
Because like I remember the Oregon game last year that you guys played. You were hyped for it. Your players played hard.
Yep.
And you almost won that game versus a number one team at home, and that would have been great. Yep. But the thing is, it's easy to get your team motivated for a big game like that, where you genuinely have some talent that could win it. Mm-hmm. It's harder to get them motivated for the smaller games, and you have to get them motivated for these, you know, smaller opponents, because that's how you improve. You have to also be playing against yourself in a way.
No, I totally
agree. Trying to improve and get better. And if you don't get better during these games, then of course you're not going to be ready whenever you have to play Oregon or Ohio State.
This is his problem. I think like we have a severe culture problem at Wisconsin right now. And to be fair, I think a lot of teams are going through this with NIL, with the transfer portal. You know, it's really hard to kind of maintain teams over the years. You're losing so many players every season. So there's not a lot of seniority. There's not a lot of leadership, right? So it really comes down to the coach, I think, to kind of like set the tone for culture. And Luke Fickell, as it turns out, is a terrible guy for culture. So I don't know. Like, I want to say this is it. Like, I want to say they're going to fire him after the season. But like, you look at his contract, he signed until like 2031. Like, I just don't know. I just don't know, Randy. I'm in for a world of hurt. So
I'm going to be honest. I think the entire tone for the season and how Luke Fickell's tenure will go is going to be completely dependent on this game. Like, this game is bigger than what it looks like on paper. Because it's going to let us know. If your team comes out actually motivated and wants to beat them and is trying hard, not even looking at the score, you can just tell by effort level if Luke Fickell is deserving of more chances after this game.
The first drive will determine this entire season. I'm all in on this dude. Watch us like fumble the ball. I'm calling it now. We're gonna fumble the ball in a handoff. Quote me on it. Quote me on it.
All right, I will quote you on it if it happens.
Speaking of, I just wanted to talk about one other throwaway game tonight. I'm going to preemptively give out a This Is Their Super Bowl award to, actually, this is tomorrow night, Illinois versus Western Illinois. I think Illinois is the most overhyped team in the top 25 right now. And I think this is going to be like one of those they win like 52 to nothing type games. And you are going to see so much smack talking out of Illinois fans throughout the rest of the week, even though they're beating a FCS team at home. That's my lock of the week right now. 52 to nothing, Illinois over Western Illinois.
So Illinois does come in as a preseason number 12. I did not realize they were ranked that high.
Ridiculous.
I know you're a little salty,
a little bit.
If that's the right term.
A little bit.
Or because they have Brett Bielema, and he's doing exactly what he did with Wisconsin at Illinois.
Yeah, yeah.
And, I mean, he's got them to be a 10-win team with tough physical play. He's got them headed the direction that Wisconsin should be.
Here's the thing, though. We know that Burt has a very like well-defined ceiling, and we've got Illinois fans talking like, well, we're ranked number 12. We're a playoff team. Like you're not playoff caliber yet. Like I want to make that clear, but they're going to think they are after winning this game against nobody. That's just who they are. That's who they are as people. So that's my lock of the week.
Really hates Illinois and Minnesota. I can tell.
Well, should we talk about Minnesota too real quick here? They're playing tonight. There's a lot of games tonight, a lot of throwaway games. Minnesota.
So here's my prediction. Here's my prediction for the Minnesota game is they're also going to beat their opponent. I think they're going to beat their opponent by like 14.
Yeah.
But they're going to celebrate it like it's their Super Bowl.
Right. It'll be the kind of game they're up by like 3 at halftime and like Buffalo just like falls apart in the fourth quarter. You know what I mean? But yes, we've been over this for 5 years now. Minnesota fans, they have no shame. Like they really, their standards are so low that it will be this Super Bowl. But I like your point though. Probably like a 2-touchdown win for those guys.
There's a couple more games. These are going to be Friday games. I think the Auburn Baylor game and the Georgia Tech Colorado game are going to be very interesting because all four of these teams, it's like we have no idea what we're going to get from them, and we are all really curious to see because of their coaching and kind of culture issues, not all issues, but things they're trying to build.
Right.
And you can kind of see pieces of it fall into place, and you can also see pieces falling apart for certain teams named Auburn. You want to see how Deion does with the new quarterback.
Are you afraid of Auburn being good this year?
I'm not afraid of them being good, but I am afraid that we have to go play at Auburn. Like, it literally does not matter how good or bad they are. When we play at Auburn, it's always some insane game where we have to do some heroic fourth quarter, weird stuff. You remember the 31-yard pass. I remember it.
I was there.
My dad, so that was a commercial break right before that pass, that 4th and 31, and he was calling my uncle and discussing Sugar Bowl tickets because he's like, there's no way.
Nope. I called it. I called it. I literally called it in DMs, I think, with you.
You did. You did. And I remember telling you to shut up. I just said, didn't shut up.
That's typical.
And then I was like, okay, never mind. I was actually mad at you when you were doing that. It's like, dude, we lost against our rival. Please don't do this and rub it in.
I'm telling you, I was confident. I don't know. It worked out. One more game I want to highlight, actually, that I realized we skipped here. It's a loaded slate this weekend. Nebraska versus Cincinnati tonight. This is an interesting one because I'm kind of afraid Nebraska might be good. What do you think of Nebraska?
I feel the exact same way. I feel the exact same way, dude. I was thinking this. Dylan Raiola is pretty good. They have decent receivers.
A little Mahomie. Yeah. He's a little
Mahomie. He does look exactly like him. I think that's kind of funny.
It's the glazing. Yeah, it's kind of pathetic. But I mean...
All of these like tanned Zoomer quarterbacks, they all have like this look where they're like super tan, they have the broccoli hair. They all look the same, dude.
It's the hair and the headband specifically. Like that's the part where they're really copying Mahomes. And his number, I think he took 15, right? Like he literally, like look up Dylan Raiola. I'm Googling right now. I've never seen a quarterback try harder to look like another quarterback. But literally, down to like
he's got the same headband, the same thick headband.
The number, the colors, like I'm not even joking. I'm he was like a five-star quarterback, right? He was like one of the highest-rated prospects.
He's good. He's a good quarterback, too.
I genuinely believe he chose Nebraska over other schools because their uniforms kind of look like the Chiefs. It's like the same red. Like it's like the glazing is that hard with this dude. So, anyways, they're going to win, right? Probably. Cincinnati. It's a little 12 school. But, like, again, my fear with Nebraska, like, long term is, like, they have a really easy schedule this year. Looking ahead, like, their only ranked opponents are Michigan and Penn State. Like, there's a very...
very winnable games.
There's a very scary chance that these guys go, like, 10-2 and make the playoffs. And I don't want to live in that world, dude.
No, I think they have the pieces and a tough physical team with good receivers and everything to be able to do something. But it would just be weird. After seeing Nebraska be a blue blood and just struggle for like 2 decades, it would be weird for them to be good again. I remember during the early 2010s, mid-2010s, and even a few years ago, it was like, well, Nebraska has no chance. They don't have a strong recruiting state, and they were only really good because they were the first team to implement like true strength and resistance training for the players.
Yeah.
But now, you know, you have to have a strong recruiting base. Like, that's why Alabama's good, is because we have so many top recruits in our state. And we have Florida right next door and Georgia right next door. We just have the talent around us. Well, Nebraska has to recruit so heavily out of state. But nowadays, in the new NIL era, like, strong recruiting. I mean, it's not that it's not an advantage anymore, but it's not necessarily a disadvantage to not live right next to it in the NIL era.
Yeah, I agree. And certainly Nebraska, they can compete with just about any Big Ten team in terms of money. And we've seen it. This is how they got a guy like Dylan Raiola. They got little Patrick Mahomes, you know, who otherwise would have never gone to a school like that. So, I don't know.
We might start seeing Nebraska fans pop up under the age of 50.
That'd be weird. Because, like, I still, like, to this day, I don't know if there's a single Nebraska fan in CFP Corps. Like, actually think about that for a sec. Have you ever seen
I know. And they're known for having such a massive fan base. That's what I'm saying. It's like, every time I think of a Nebraska fan or see a Nebraska fan, they're old.
And they all look the same. I've said this before, but, like, really, like, they all, like, if you've ever seen a Nebraska fan in real life, they all kind of look like Scott Frost. And the reason is, they have a very small gene pool in Nebraska. I'll say that much. Like, people don't, like, you don't leave Nebraska. You know what I mean? Like, have you ever met someone from Nebraska?
I have not.
Think about that. Like, let that.
I mean, you're the Midwestern guy, so you're gonna know them better.
But I don't like. I've met people from every single Midwest state. Plenty of people from Iowa, Minnesota, Ohio, Illinois, Indiana, Michigan. No one from Nebraska. No one. So yeah, it's a weird place, dude. Speaking of I had a really good transition. Let me just use it real quick.
No, go ahead.
Speaking of teams that used to be bad but are perplexingly good now, I think we got to talk about number one Texas at Ohio State. What's the deal? Now that this game, first of all, this game doesn't matter. Let's get that.
Yeah.
Let's make that clear. They're both making the playoffs. They're both getting a bye. Probably it doesn't matter. But who do you think is going to win this one?
This is so hard. I think Texas is going to win. I think Arch Manning is going to make some fourth quarter, not heroics, but he's going to score a touchdown in the fourth quarter to win the game at some point. It may not be the very last drive, but he's going to clearly perform when it matters the most. I know everybody kind of memes that, he's a Manning. That's why he gets that hype. But the way I'm seeing it is he actually is a great quarterback. And I think the influence from his family, like, he's getting one-on-one coaching from some of the best quarterbacks to ever play since he was in diapers. You know what I mean?
I totally
so I think he's going to be ready for the moment. And I think he's going to be so ready for the moment as the leader of the team and quarterback that he's going to push them over the edge to beat Ohio State. I will somewhat disagree with saying the game doesn't matter, because if Ohio State loses, you know, one or two Big Ten games and they don't make the Big Ten championship and they're maybe like, what, a 3-loss team, then that, you know, could very much affect their playoff chances, because, you know, Ohio State can go 3 losses and then make a run just like they did last year. I think they were 2-loss teams.
The thing is, if you look, go ahead and look at their schedule, folks, look at Ohio State's schedule. They're winning every game other than Michigan for the rest of the season. Like, their only really good opponent they're facing is Penn State, but we all know that Penn State can't beat Ohio State. So, like, I agree with your premise, Randy, but, like, I don't see Ohio State dropping more than Texas and Michigan this year.
If they Texas, Penn State, and Michigan, then, like, that's out. But if they win Texas but lose to Penn State and Michigan, then they'd be fine. It matters. I think it still matters, but it's not going to be the end-all be-all like it would have been a couple years ago.
I mean, likewise for Texas. Like, they don't face Alabama this year. Their only real opponent, I would argue, is at Georgia very late in the season. So I think Texas could lose this game and be just fine. I think both of these teams could go 10-2 very easily and make the playoffs. But regardless, as for the game itself, I want your thoughts on this, because I had forgotten. Ohio State's quarterback is a Bama transfer, right?
Julian Saiyan.
Super Saiyan. Okay, what's the deal with this guy? Is he good? Should I be concerned?
I mean, we didn't really see him play that much. He's fine. He's going to be decent. He's going to be your prototypical Ohio State quarterback. Ryan Day knows how to coach quarterbacks. He knows how to get the most out of them. Mm-hmm. But you'll notice that they do often struggle early in the season.
True.
So I think the moment he may not be fully ready to embrace this moment, mm-hmm. like Arch Manning will be.
He's got experience now. He's a junior now, which is wild, right?
Right.
Good Lord, we've been hearing about this guy forever. Yeah, I think Texas probably wins. How you're describing, I'm just gonna say, like, up front, the Arch Manning Heisman campaign crap that's gonna be spun up from this is going to be insufferable. Not even as a hater, but just as, like, a guy who wants to enjoy the sport. Like, I don't know. Like, I can't think of a quarterback prospect who's been more overhyped than Arch Manning in my lifetime. You know?
He has been overhyped a little bit because of his name. I mean, yeah. Everybody's interested to see if he can follow in their footsteps, on their big footsteps. But like I said, I think his family has actually done a great job of keeping him reined in.
Yeah.
Like, I remember seeing this headline or something. I don't tweet at recruits. I don't even have a Twitter. But I remember his Twitter headline was literally just high school student as his description. Like, he's trying to not play into the fact that he's a Manning. So he's humble about it, and I think that's going to help him a lot.
I guess we'll see. We'll find out Saturday morning. Randy, it's time. Let's talk about Bama. You wanted to talk to him before. What's the deal?
I have a lot of hope for this season. I'm actually extremely optimistic because last year was kind of a weird year where, granted, we have, like, extreme talent, but it's kind of like they don't fit the Boer system. And you can kind of see that in a lot of our play, that our players didn't quite fit the system. So he's trying to adjust things a little bit. And it just, you know, sometimes it's going to have its struggles and we can win with talent. But this year we have a lot of transfer portal guys coming in, guys transferring out, new recruits. We have a lot more players that fit what DeBoer wants to do. And I think that's going to help us a lot. And DeBoer usually doesn't struggle early in the season. His team is usually ready to play game one.
Definitely.
But I've noticed just in looking at back at some Washington games, it's very live or die by quarterback play, which is so different than what we're used to.
Sure.
But that doesn't mean the other players, like, don't matter. They're going to make a huge difference. But he expects his quarterback, and he says to the media, he expects his quarterbacks to be able to make plays.
And who's the who's the quarterback now that you got?
Ty Simpson, and we have seen great flashes from him. He was young, he wasn't quite ready, and that's fine. You know, Milroe was an extreme athletic freak, so he was going to put Milroe out there, tell him, let it rip, try to make some plays and see what happens. And we saw what happened.
Well, he was pretty good.
We saw
at times.
Jekyll and Hyde. He was a very Jekyll and Hyde, but that's what DeBoer wants to do, is encourage his quarterback, go out there and make plays, don't play scared.
Yeah.
And I think that's going to serve a guy like Ty Simpson very well. So I'm excited. I'm just excited to see what our team's going to look like and how exciting these games are going to be, especially because we have a tough slate very late in the season. Tennessee, South Carolina, LSU, Oklahoma.
Yeah.
And we'll play Georgia a few weeks before that. So
gotta get ready for that. Obviously Bama's going to win this one. Do you think it's going to be, like, I think the spread right now is 14 points. Do you kind of see this being, I don't know, one of those games that's sort of close at halftime, or is this just going to be like a statement win from DeBoer?
DeBoer doesn't really ever have statement wins like that. Like, he's not like Saban where his teams are just going to win 52-3
or something. Yeah.
Every single game, he could be playing the 1984 Chicago Bears and still win 17-14, or he could be playing Louisiana Monroe and win 20-14. That's just how he operates. I don't know why. I have no idea why it is that way, but it just is.
So from a neutral perspective, this could be kind of a fun game to watch, is what you're telling me.
Yes, it could. I would say the biggest thing to look out for is quarterback play and the consistency of the quarterback play, because I think that will set the tone for the season.
Makes sense, given his scheme. Looking ahead, rest of the evening slate here, we got another pretty big game that I'm not really hearing a lot of buzz about. Number 4 Clemson versus number 9 LSU. This is a game that I actually think will have potential playoff implications. Who do you think has the edge in this matchup, Brandy?
I think it's going to be Clemson, actually. I think LSU is going to get the full Brian Kelly experience of going 10-2. They can go 10-2, maybe sneak into the playoffs, lose in round 1 or 2. And I really think that's about Brian Kelly's ceiling.
Yeah.
Like, he went to LSU for more access to talent, but we're seeing now that it's a coaching issue and Notre not Dame. A talent issue. I mean, he had talent at Notre Dame. So, like, God forbid you had to work with a number 8 talent composite instead of the number 3.
I mean, Notre Dame went to the national championship last year. So, like, they obviously have the potential to get it done. One fun tidbit that I saw regarding LSU, they're since 2020, they are 0-5 in season openers. Which, to be fair, that means they're playing good teams. I remember we played them in like 2015, 2016, and we beat them, thankfully. But it seems like they're, I don't know, like they schedule these tough opponents, but then lose. So it seems like a safe bet to say that LSU is going to lose this one. But I don't know why they do this.
They both do have very veteran quarterbacks. I think that's going to be interesting to watch. But I just think Clemson is starting. They're starting to reload and finally adjust to the new era.
Yeah.
They're going to have some tough players. I think they're going to readjust a little bit. I think Dabo might be coming around. And it's like, I guess it's better late than never. But on the same token, it's like, why did it take you so long?
I mean, all's well that ends well. You know, for what it's worth, they did go, 9-3 last year. Made the playoffs. I, like, forget that they made the playoffs. But, I mean, it's a team that certainly has tons of talent, tons of potential. I just hope both teams are ready. Like, all that I can hope for in a game like this is that, like, both teams come out and play well. Because, like, if they both play to their full potential, we could have a great game at hand.
I also think Clemson is purposely trying to schedule as many SEC opponents as possible. One, to potentially angle themselves to join the conference in the future. And two, the more they can associate themselves with SEC opponents and playing like 3 in 1 year and then going to the playoffs, they're going to not have the brand of an ACC team, if that makes sense. Because when you think of a team from the ACC, you're like, oh, they're from a weaker conference. And they're trying to shake that by playing as many SEC opponents as possible. Mm-hmm. And that's probably a smart move, even though you risk losing the games.
I think the committee definitely, like, takes into account strength of schedule. So even if they lose this one, like, if it's close, they put up a good fight, you know, I think they're willing to come
back to that. It's not just strength of schedule. It's just perception of who you are as a team.
Sure, definitely. Because I don't, like, associate Clemson with a lot of the other ACC schools, like you know, Duke, Wake Forest, or Boston College. You know, like, I definitely, you kind of have to respect them just because of all the success they've had.
Right.
This one other game I wanted to talk about, another big game involving an ACC school, which is actually Sunday night, folks. Number 6 Notre Dame at number 10 Miami. Why do I feel like Miami has no business being top 10? Like, am I missing something? Was there a big transfer or something over the season that I missed?
Jimba, are you memeing? Or are you serious?
No, I'm memeing because up until yesterday, I didn't realize that Carson Beck was a Miami Hurricane. I literally didn't know.
You realize Wisconsin literally filed a lawsuit against Miami for tampering.
That's true. So they're tampering with everybody is what I'm hearing.
Yeah, so there is a transfer, a Miami transfer from Wisconsin that Wisconsin has sued Miami. Like, they're going to court over the fact that they tampered, which I find kind of funny.
Yeah.
As far as them having any business being top 10, I think we're seeing this with Mario Cristobal, that he is, like, sort of Brian Kelly-ish and that he has a 10-2 ceiling.
Yeah.
Like, he has all of this talent, and what he's known for is being able to acquire talent at a very high level. He was a great recruiter. He's still a great recruiter. Miami has more talent than they've not ever had, but probably haven't had since the 90s or 80s.
Mm-hmm.
But he just can't pull it together. And Brian Kelly's the same way. Yeah. There's a lot of coaches that can get all this talent and not put it together to create a championship culture and team. And I think he's in the same boat. Right. And I think he's playing against a much better coach on the other side with Notre Dame. Marcus Freeman is a much better coach 100%. Than him.
Yeah, 100%.
And I just think for that fact alone that he's going to know how to have their team ready to play for this moment. That's why I think Notre Dame is going to win this game.
Conversely, this is my one qualm with this, right? Miami, for whatever reason, is the kind of team that like always starts out hot. Like they'll start the year on like an 8-0 record and like become super overhyped only to fall in the latter half of the year, like the last three or four games, right? We saw that last year. We saw it in 2017 when they almost made the playoffs, back when it mattered, making the playoffs. And so like, I listen, folks, a lot of Notre Dame fans of the show, and I'm rooting for you, but I'd be kind of afraid right now if I was a fan of the Irish, because Miami playing at home especially, this could be interesting. That's all I'll say.
Oh, yeah, it is at Miami. I think that's going to make it very interesting.
Night game should be fun. Not that there's a lot of Miami fans, but like there's fake Miami fans like when there's hype, right?
They will show up. They will fill the stadium, and they'll be loud, and it'll be a fun atmosphere. The thing with Miami falling apart later in the season, it comes back to this point I made earlier in the podcast, which was it's easy to get your team hyped for these games that they know matter, that they know they can win, like Notre Dame. But it's harder to keep them focused through the grind of a season and keep them improving instead of going through the motions of practice and kind of stagnating.
Right.
Like to, because it takes a lot of mental effort to like really examine yourself, examine your plays every week, constantly nitpick yourself, kind of think ahead as to what you need to fix as individually.
Right.
That can be hard to really do. And as a coach, it falls on coaching to be able to get them ready.
I agree. And I think Mario Cristobal, that is kind of one of his biggest weaknesses for sure. Any other games, Randy? Or have we covered all our bases?
We have Virginia Tech at South Carolina. The kickoff. It's actually at Mercedes-Benz. I think this is going to be very interesting because Virginia Tech they're not ranked in the preseason. And I'm just curious to see what they're going to be able to do because they've been down for a while.
Yeah.
And I would just like to see them finally get back to who they are because Virginia Tech is a really fun atmosphere. It's fun to watch entertainment and all of that. But on the same token, South Carolina has been rising as a program. They have Glasses quarterback. I love him. Norris Sellers.
Yeah.
They're very hyped, and they're a great team. So
I've got a theory on South Carolina, and this is, you know, with all due respect to Hashbrown132, I think they'll be a good team this year, but I think at about the halfway point of the season, they're going to be way, way overhyped. And here's why. Look at their schedule. Like, this is the most, like, lopsided schedule, I think, of the entire season for any team. They start off Virginia Tech, South Carolina State, Vanderbilt, Missouri, Kentucky. Like, that's 5-0 right there. So they're going to be 5-0 probably, like, ranked, like, top 8 probably at this point. But then they hit an absolute gauntlet halfway through the season at number 9 LSU against number 18 Oklahoma. Versus number 8 Alabama, at number 21 Ole Miss, at number 19 Texas A&M, and then concluding the season against number 4 Clemson. Like, there's no way they're going to actually... Like, if South Carolina survives this, they're the best team in the country as far as I'm concerned. I think...
Well, it's funny you say that because they have a habit of starting off the season very slow.
Yeah.
And, like, dropping games they shouldn't. But then they have a habit of going on an absolute tear and beating teams like number 10 Texas A&M. They beat Clemson, Texas A&M, Missouri last year. They beat down Oklahoma.
They almost beat Bama.
After they lost, they did almost beat us. After they lost to us, they didn't lose a single regular season game. And they were 3-3 at that point. I think they did something similar in 2023. They started 1-2 and ended up an 8-win team. They beat Clemson. They beat Tennessee, who was number 5. And when I say beat Tennessee, I mean beat them by like 30-something points.
Yeah.
So they have like this. They have to be consistent.
Yeah. Seems to be their
problem. Because they've shown that they can beat top teams, and I always respect a program that shows that they can beat top teams, even if they drop a few they should.
Right. I got that.
But that gives me more hope than a team that can go 10-2 and always lose versus, you know, Ohio State.
That was,
you know what I mean?
That was Wisconsin for like a decade. I miss it. I'd go back to that if I could, Randy.
Because you were always a great quarterback away from making a championship run, and that's how Brett Bielema's teams were and still are at Illinois.
Yep.
I remember the Russell Wilson year and the two Hail Marys that kept you out.
We all do, Randy. You're in the dairy land.
I'm sorry to bring that up. I know that's a sore point.
It's okay. It's okay. Any other games, Randy? Any other games?
There's a lot of games, but I believe that's it. They're all like spread out over the weekend because you have Sunday games and Monday games.
Yeah, and we got a lot of, I mean, the majority of games are like, you know, Oregon's playing Montana State. It's like, whatever, you know, we'll see what
happens. I do want to make a point about the ACC is that it really seems like the ACC is actually the conference that's kind of posing themselves. If Florida State can get on board and they can glaze their own conference instead of actively trying to dismantle them, like, they're good. They have so much potential to be a great conference, almost on the level of the SEC and Big Ten. They just need some of the programs to kind of continue to improve and get better, like Miami, Virginia Tech, Florida State, Clemson, and even North Carolina. Trying to think of them. Notre Dame is half ACC.
Sort of,
I'm just saying their perception has a lot of potential to get really good. They just have to actually buy into it.
Perhaps Florida State can lead the charge with a surprise win this weekend. I'm just kidding.
It's not even just about that. It's they need to publicly in the media not to try to destroy their own conference.
Well, I agree. I mean, what Florida State did over the offseason with, like, trying to get out and stuff, I mean, that's just...
And I think I made this point last year. You know how you guys make fun of us for the whole SEC thing?
Of course we do.
But the reason we do that is because by having such a great perception, it makes us look better. We get the benefit of the doubt sometimes. Mm-hmm. It improves us as a team to be able to do that. So that's kind of part of it.
I think it's tough, though, because the ACC is so, like, geographically speaking, it's, like, not just, like, it's multiple regions. Like, half the conference is actually in the South, or, like, the kind of the, you know, like, Florida, obviously, South Carolina. But then the other half is, like, these, like, kind of, you know, coastal elites, like, you know, New York and New Jersey, like that kind of area.
North Carolina literally has Argyle as like a pattern there.
And so it's this
pattern.
Weird discrepancy, you know, of like different cultures. And so I think maybe because of that, it's sort of hard to rally around the conference compared to like the Big Ten or SEC, where there's a much more defined like geographical, you know, center.
I know exactly what you mean. And like USC and UCLA and Oregon and Washington, I don't know how they necessarily fit into Big Ten culture. Oregon especially, like they have such a West Coast vibe, but I think by only having four of those teams and them all joining at the same time, I think that helps you kind of keep your perception and be still like kind of have this, not elitist, but you know, it's just great programs, great schools, the best public universities you can attend in the whole country in the Big Ten. And that's something to rally around beyond just the whole Midwestern tough boy vibe.
Whereas
the SEC is...
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I'll say, well, I just feel like the ACC doesn't have like an identity. Like it's many smaller identities, you know? Like what even is the coast at this point? Because the coast means both like, you know, deep South and New York City. So I don't know. Hard.
I do think they should lean into the whole snooty thing, but just kind of put Clemson and Florida State on top. They can, I think they could manage it, but they would need to be on the same page, and they're not, and they're not kind of coming together.
They can be together. Snooty and how good
I
they
think
are.
That's really the problem. You know, like, I mean, you know, the SEC, we have our own culture where it's tough Southern boys, and we have all this talent, and we're just going to make plays and all this. Because I remember you making a point. I remember you asking me, why do SEC wide receivers make like 8 jukes just to get 2 extra yards and then fumble the ball?
Yeah. They do, dude.
Like, that's just part of our culture, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I totally understand. We'll see, folks. We'll see. But yeah, other than that, though, Randy, I'm looking forward, I guess, to this slate of games. Other than tonight, I've got a good feeling about this weekend in general, so... I guess we'll see.
It's going to be nice to have something to do this Saturday other than just like be stressed about house projects.
Yes. Yes, dude. Oh my God. I'm looking forward to that.
Growing up is hard, dude.
It is comforting just like having football on like the entire day. Like no matter how you're doing, just like check the scores and
It centers your soul. You just feel it in your soul. You finally have your thing. You feel comfortable. You enjoy the weekend a little bit more because of football. It's just part of American Southern Midwestern culture.
No one else. That's right. All right, folks. Thank you all for joining in with us this week. This is the Jim Podcast. As always, folks.